Hello, everyone. Welcome to Women's Sports Central. This is Brenda Van Langen along with Michelle Vopel, and today is 11-11-11, and also Veterans Day. I don't know if it's appropriate to say Happy Veterans Day, but appreciative Veterans Day, thankful and grateful Veterans Day. We just appreciate so much all that serve our country and sacrifice their time, their health, their lives, and everything for the good of our country and their families as well.
Yeah, so I think you can say happy.
I think so. So thank you so much for joining us today, and it's been a wild week in the world of sports, and of course everybody enthralled in all that's happening at Penn State, and we won't talk a lot about it, but it does affect women's sports, and I think that the situation there at Penn State is shining a very glaring spotlight on the fact that everybody is paying the price for a lack of leadership, and where laws are broken and children are violated, adults must be held accountable, and all of that is coming to light now.
Yeah, it really is, and you know, it's one of these topics that I think people are in some ways are, you know, they feel very, very emotionally torn up about what's gone on here. And it's been, you know, a difficult thing to know all the time, you know, what are the right responses to this? Where's the anger coming from? Some of the almost extreme anger that's directed towards the leadership at Penn State. And I think it comes from, I think this is a primal instinct with most people, which is to protect children. And it really goes to the core of who we are as a species. And I think that's why there's so much anger about it. There's anger at the perpetrator, alleged perpetrator. Obviously, he hasn't gone through the judicial process. But the anger there is in some ways, it's sort of like when you identify a person you think of as a monster, you're angry at the monster and you want to understand why in the world somebody could be like this, but you're also angry at anybody who didn't stop the monster, and that's what people are going through now. And what you and I have talked about, you know, in terms of just an overall big picture is, and I was really very... you know, I had some days I wanted to think about how I wanted to write this about the situation with Rainey Portland and the women's basketball program with Penn State. When this news came out about this child abuse scandal, I thought, you know, it in some ways, the way this kept unfolding, it reminded me of leadership deficit at Penn State with Portland for a long time. The situations, and I don't want to say they're comparable. I don't mean that, but they're comparable in this way, which is when you have a situation where people are potentially getting hurt, does the leadership step in and make sure that that doesn't continue happening, or do they pay lip service to it? Do they put all their trust in a certain authority figure and say, you know, we've done what we need to do? And I think in both cases, the leadership at Penn State failed, and I think that's a very instructive lesson, a sobering lesson for athletic directors and school presidents and coaches across the country to look at.
Because when it comes down to it, you know, when you look at who are you protecting, and you have to show support for coaches and leaders within an athletic department, within a college, within any organization. But if you are protecting them more than ultimately people that are being hurt in whatever situation, then your focus and your allegiance is in the wrong place, and your leadership is in the wrong place if you are not doing all you can to protect the most vulnerable, the people that need the protection.
And, you know, for so many years, and this will sound harsh, but all of you who are listening to this, I think, know this. Penn State was a toxic name in women's basketball. I mean, the people who followed women's basketball would roll their eyes or cringe at Penn State because everybody thought of it as a homophobic program. And Rene Portland didn't do anything to disavow that that kind of air that was around Penn State. She didn't. And there were people who said, you know, oh, she really isn't like that bad. Or, you know, there were a lot of defenders for her. And, you know, her defense, if you will, for, you know, almost, what, 15 years, before, you know, in the time between 1991, when Penn State added sexual orientation to its anti-discrimination policy, and 2005, when Jennifer Harris, who had been kicked off the team, supposedly for performance issues, but she'd been kicked off the team, she sued Portland and Tim Curry for discrimination. In that time period, which is 14 years, did Coach Portland ever come forward and say, you know what, I made some statements, or I created the appearance that I did not want gay people on this team. I said things that would make people think I was homophobic. Anybody who's seen the Training Rules documentary knows this. Did she ever come forward in those 14 years to try to clear that up in any way, or say that she changed her mind, or say, I'm sorry that I did this? No. And when her own university found her after the lawsuit, you know, they're trying to scramble, again, leadership. They didn't act quickly enough. They're trying to scramble after a lawsuit. When they find that, yes, indeed, she'd created a hostile environment, and they fine her $10,000, she said there's a flaw in the investigative process. Right down to the end, she never admitted she did anything wrong. And I think her punishment, and it may sound like I'm being judgmental and unfair to her, but frankly, this is how I feel. Her punishment was, when she left women's basketball, there was no goodbye. There was no fond farewell. It was almost like, thank goodness. You know, this is something we don't want in college sports. There are gay people in college sports. There are gay coaches. There is a need for acceptance and not just tolerance, but inclusion and understanding. And those are things leadership has to pay attention to. It's not just about what's our bottom line. You know, what TV contract can we negotiate? If you're in a position as a university president or an athletic director, and you ever lose that core, I guess, belief that you're in the kid business. That's what you're ultimately supposed to be doing. You're taking students on that last step between being young people and being independent adults. Those last 4 years, if you ever lose that, then you've lost a real sight of what you're supposed to be doing.
And the Board of Trustees stepping in this case and eliminate and firing Joe Paterno and firing Graham Spanier are now in a position to set the tone for leadership for the future. And it is a call to universities all across the country. But you have to wonder what kind of an effect it has on the teams there now at Penn State that had nothing to do with this scandal and that are building up their programs. I mean, we've talked a lot about Penn State volleyball and a four-time defending champion, and they at least get to escape this weekend and go on the road, and they play at Illinois, one of the biggest volleyball games. But on campus tonight, Friday, is an NCAA women's soccer game where Penn State hosts Army. The women's basketball season gets started, and Coquise Washington has done so much to rebuild the women's basketball program there. They have a women's basketball game on campus. So all of those student athletes, coaches, programs are being impacted by all of this.
You can't help but be. There's just been so much negative publicity, and again, for understandable reasons why, you know, so many people have reacted this way. For Coquise Washington, you know, she came into the program and I think really wanted to set a tone that it's a completely different regime. It's a different We don't want to be disrespectful of all the success of Penn State women's basketball in the past or all the great players in the past, but she wanted to create a clean slate. It was very clear to me that she wanted to do that. And last year they made the NCAA tournament for the first time since that, you know, awful night in 2005 when, you know, these three players were dismissed after they lost to Liberty, and really the whole unraveling of things in that program began. So I think she's done a really good job with how she's rebuilt the program. I think they're a contender for the Big Ten title this year, but how does this affect them? You know, it's so hard to know what the long-term ramifications are of getting this much, you know, basically a week long of constant, you know, negative publicity, for lack of a better way to put it. Mm-hmm. Their wrestling team is a defending national champions. I mean, those are some really good kids on those teams and good coaches. And they're all, unfortunately, you know, going to have to deal with some of the fallout that has nothing to do with them. I think, and you and I have talked about this, the only thing they can do is say, we're going to try to go out and play as well as we can, do the things we do in the community as well as we can, do everything to show that we're not a part of this toxic environment, and that hopefully as it cleans up things with the football program, the things that so many of the other programs at Penn State are doing can get some, you know, recognition.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could probably dedicate an hour show to this, but we want to keep this show to 30 to 35 minutes.
And keep listening to it.
Exactly, so that we can bring you a lot of different topics and issues and so forth. And hopefully you can follow us throughout the week on Twitter, or Michelle has a lot of articles actually about this issue. This issue, the women's basketball, etc., but this issue specifically on ESPN.com, so you can follow up with that.
Yeah, I tell you, it's sometimes so interesting as a writer what your week can be like. You know, I wrote a couple of stories that I was, you know, are from, you know, very, you know, relatively obscure, if you want, sports, at least in terms of what gets on SportsCenter, which is men's soccer. I wrote a story this week about a guy who had, New Mexico's number one men's soccer team. I know this is a women's sports show, but I think all the women's sports fans even would love to read about this guy. His first year, he redshirted. Second and third year, didn't get to play a whole lot. Finally, now as a redshirt junior, he's a starting goalkeeper for the number one team. And I asked him, well, gosh, it must have taken a lot of patience and, you know, going through this. And he went, just started reciting all the people he wanted to thank for it. You know, his coaches, his parents, his friends, and his girlfriend. And the guy talked to me for like 10 minutes about how much his girlfriend's support and telling him, you know, just believe in what you're doing and you're going to make it, how much that meant to him. And I thought that was so cool that you know, he wasn't saying, oh, yeah, I really persevered through this. Right. He was giving all the credit to other people. Another story I did this week was on field hockey, North Carolina's field hockey team. And we talked about, you know, I think on the last show about Caitlin Feljowski going from Mexico to Norfolk and winning a gold medal in the Pan Am Games and then being in a 1-versus-2 matchup. North Carolina is a number one seed. The field hockey tournament starts tomorrow. And that was such a fun story to do. I talked to Caitlin and one of her teammates, Elizabeth Stevens, who I will say is a St. Louis Cardinals fan. So that worked its way into the story. So working on that. Working on a story, I did a story on Brittany Griner and Brendan. You heard Brittany talking about her skateboarding adventures.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
Really fun story. And then a story that was just excruciating to work on, which was to go back and review things that happened with Penn State and Portland and feel like, okay, am I writing this correctly? All of those are on ESPN.com or should be posted. I haven't checked. But it is part of our sports world sometimes that we encounter these kids that absolutely remind us of why we love sports so much. But there is another side, unfortunately, of sports that we sometimes have to deal with. And all we can do is hope people learn lessons and better decisions are made.
So I'm glad you brought all those up because it shows the variety of things that you work on within the course of a week. And so people can definitely check that out on ESPN.com. Let's briefly talk about volleyball and soccer. Take a break and then come back because tonight women's basketball starts. So
yes, and soccer, NCAA soccer tonight. Basketball, yeah,
exactly. So it's a fun time of year. There's so much going on, but volleyball, UCLA remains number one. We talked earlier about the fact that Penn State will be leaving, has left, I'm sure, University Park, Pennsylvania.
Probably couldn't wait to get out of there.
Exactly.
Huh?
Probably maybe left a little bit early, and is playing at Illinois. So that's a big game.
Yeah, very big matchup.
Because as everybody knows, Illinois was number one team in the country. They've had three losses since then, but they've had Penn State's number in Big Ten play the last couple of years. They ended their home game Big Ten winning streak last year. And their Big Ten win streak overall last year, mm-hmm. and then their Big Ten home win streak.
They had so many
earlier
streaks
this year.
It's hard to keep up with them. Yeah.
So that's a big matchup because Illinois hasn't played as well lately. They need to get back on track. So that's Friday night on in the Big Ten.
Oh, you're not kidding. They do need to get back on track, and we say this throughout the course of the year, and it's same way with basketball. Is these are the matchups that when the selection committee is doing seedings, these can be such big keys to what your seeding is. And I think Illinois really kind of needs to get its mojo back. They had it and can get derailed there. So this is a big matchup for both of those squads. And you really have to feel it for the Penn State kids. They're probably like, gosh, we just want to get out of State College and not think about this or talk about this. I don't blame them.
And a shout out to Hawaii who has moved their way up into the top five.
Yeah, talk about a program that's just a lot of times, and it shouldn't, but they kind of float out there, on the island. They're in the WAC. They're going to be moving to the Big West next year, which I think is really good I just think it's a better conference for them to be in for volleyball, for sure. But they're in the WAC, and they kind of just, it's like they play their non-conference matchups, and then they go into the WAC play, and people kind of forget about them because they kind of think, oh, they're going to win the WAC, right? Well, they lost in the WAC tournament last year, so we'll have to see how they do with that this year. But I don't know, Brenda, do you think we can find somebody to send us out to the Hawaii regional
for
volleyball?
Because we could do our show a live remote from, we'd figure out a way to do it a live remote from Hawaii, wouldn't we?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Any time of the day too. You name the time and I'll be there.
We'll be there. Exactly.
So yeah, they've got a regional this year and we may see the Rainbow Wahine in San Antonio for the Final Four.
And also in top 10 volleyball news, we discussed last week the situation with Lauren Cook being suspended from the Nebraska volleyball team for her being charged in a hit and run. And John Cook, her coach and father, said he would hold his setter out until the legal situation was resolved. Well, this week she was charged with a felony in Lancaster County Court for leaving the scene of an accident, but she has accepted a pretrial diversion program that will remain in place for a year. And she was required to do some community service with that and to not drive and other things. So in some ways, it can be seen as the legal part of this has been resolved. And John Cook even talked about Tom Osborne, the fact that John Cook said, "We have a plan. Lauren has been cleared to play by the university and Coach Osborne. She took responsibility for her mistakes. And it's a great opportunity to rebuild on some of the things that happened and make a difference through the life skills program." So this isn't just a decision by John Cook, but obviously Tom Osborne has gotten involved and attorneys, et cetera, to make sure that she has that she is serving the time she needs to away from volleyball, but she's given the opportunity to get back on the court when it's appropriate. There's no official word, but it seems, though, since it's resolved, that she should be back on the court soon.
Yeah, I would think that's the case. And, this is just a tough and sort of uncomfortable situation, obviously, for John Cook. This is his child and his setter. So it's probably best that other people got involved, Tom Osborne, and that they followed a procedure because, on one hand, people are always thinking she's going to get preferential treatment. By the same token, she shouldn't get harsher treatment than somebody else. Lauren has made some mistakes, and maybe this is, I tell you what, a lot of people make that particular mistake. Speeding a lot of, and because that's what all of her tickets are for, she drives too fast, and all these issues are about driving fast and maybe being a little careless, and maybe we all need the reminder to not do that. So she's a nice kid, a really nice person, and I think that doesn't excuse anything, but you know, I hope she really learns from this and doesn't just see this as, oh, I've got to do all this stuff before I, you know, I get this off my record, but says, okay, I really need to change the way I think, my mindset when I get into a car.
Right. And my thing about it is that, as a setter, as the quarterback on the team, she's very responsible on the court and has the weight of her team on her shoulders in so many ways. And as a student athlete and balancing her time and her studies, et cetera, she's a responsible person, but she did a very irresponsible thing when she clipped a motorcycle rider with two passengers and panicked and left the scene of the crime. And, you know, your thought is, if you did that, what would your initial reaction be? I would hope it would be, oh my God, I hope, you know, I need to see if they're okay and jump out and see if they're okay. Instead, she panicked and left. And that's obviously the felony and the problem in this. Now, she came to her senses and called the police shortly thereafter. And it wasn't like she was escaping and, you know, not taking responsibility. She panicked. And it's just one of those things where I think all athletes, you know, need to have that same responsibility away from the court as they do on the court. And so a very tough lesson to learn, but, you know, a life lesson nonetheless.
Yes. All right. Life lesson.
Yeah. Let's talk about soccer. Soccer starts tonight. We said Army plays at Penn State tonight, and they're all home sites, all campus sites, until we get to the actual semifinals that will be in Kennesaw, Georgia, later in the process. And so we talked about this on last week's show. North Carolina, who's won so many national championships, is actually a 3 seed and aren't one of the top 1 or 2 seeds in the 4 regions. So I think there could be some interesting things happen throughout the soccer tournament.
Exactly. And, you know, right now, Duke, the North Carolina's, you know, long-suffering kind of, I don't know what you want to say. It's maybe fair to say, I think it is fair to say, if you're Duke women's soccer, boy, have you been in the Sequoia's shadow for a long time, right? And this year, Duke women's soccer is, you know, has had a better season than North Carolina. And right now, if you were going to say which one you think is more likely to make the College Cup, it'd probably be the Blue Devils. So, you know, kind of fun for them. I'm sure they don't exactly want to try to measure themselves against the Tar Heels all the time, but people will do that. But it's kind of a fun thing for them. I hope everybody gets a chance to read my colleague Graham Hayes. He's really a women's soccer expert. He spends so much time studying these teams and has written several pieces this fall, all of them very informative, very interesting features, and also some really good analysis. So if you really want to know what's coming up in the women's soccer tournament, I just urge you to go to the ESPN.com colleges page. And I'm not just doing a commercial, but just because I think Graham is that good, and, yeah, and he's got such insight. And you know, one thing Graham's been writing about is, you know, is this finally going to be Stanford's year? You know, and do they really need to capitalize this year? They're the number one ranked team, and they've come close before, but they haven't won a national championship. Is this going to be the year for them? Not like Stanford trophy cases, Brenda, are needing more trophies, but maybe women's soccer would definitely like to add to that.
Yes, no doubt about it. All right, so we're going to come back and talk about women's hoops that starts tonight. So we'll take a quick break. This is Women's Sports Central. Hey everyone, thanks for listening to Women's Sports Central on womenssportscentral.com. You can follow Brenda and Michelle on Twitter by following Brenda at Brenda Van Lingen, VanLengen, or Michelle at Michelle V, and it's spelled MECHELLEV. You can also follow us on a new Twitter account, Women's Sports Central. It's abbreviated Women's Sports CEN. And you can follow us on Twitter. You can also like Brenda on Facebook at BV on TV, etc. Welcome back to Women's Sports Central. I'm Brenda Van Lingen along with Michelle Vopel. And before we get into basketball, I just have to mention that Hope Solo should definitely get a shout out for making it to the Final Four on Dancing with the Stars. She was much maligned early in the process for being too strong and athletic and was not able to be as graceful on the dance floor. And the last couple of weeks, she's just really let go and have had fun and has shown herself to be a pretty good dancer and, of course, an incredible competitor. And so just a little shout out to Hope Solo. I know you don't watch the show, Michelle, but I actually do.
It's okay, Brenda. I'm totally deferring to you on the Dancing with the Stars expertise, much like if I was to say, what play should we run here, Brenda? I would say, you make that decision because you know X's and O's so much better than I do. You're the Dancing with the Stars X's and O's person, too. That said, I think I told you, I know everything's going on just because you can't escape it. I mean, it's like always on, you know, when I turn on my computer, I have Yahoo as my homepage. I'm not doing an advertisement for Yahoo, but that is my homepage. And it's always like, you know, latest celebrity kicked off Dancing with the Stars. And so you always know what's right, going on, right, whether you watch it or not. But I will absolutely take your word for it that Hope has really turned herself into quite a dancer. And I'm not surprised in all seriousness because she is a great elite athlete and a lot of dancing is athleticism. So it's really not a big surprise that if you give her enough time to work on it, she is going to be very good at it.
Yeah, exactly. I've just been drawn into the show the last couple of years. I love the competition part, but I like the storylines and the different personalities and the different people that come to the dance floor and I really was rooting for Hope Solo in a lot of ways because she is the female athlete on this show. And there have been other athletes, but they've been gymnasts and figure skaters and others. And she's really the team sport athlete representative.
Absolutely.
And because of her work ethic and determination and athleticism, she's done well. But she's also, like I said, been able to let go a little bit and just have some fun and really has evolved into a very good dancer as well. So I hope she's enjoying it, and it's been fun to watch her represent women athletes on this version of Dancing with the Stars. All right, let's change gears. Tonight, the women's basketball season starts. Big game, Stanford at Texas. Tonight we'll be on the Longhorn Sports Network. Now, not very many people get the Longhorn Sports Network, but this weekend people can go to longhornnetwork.com and have access for free. So if you want to watch a good women's basketball game, it'll be online at longhornnetwork.com and a chance to see the Ogwumike sisters. Stanford has just an incredible non-conference schedule ahead of them, but to play at Texas and Gail Gestenkors and finally having Cokie Reed back on the floor and then so many seniors that have evolved and grown in her system, I think it's going to be a great first night of basketball.
Absolutely, and I think a lot of people are looking forward to that because they want to see, you know, is Texas, are they a better team than they were last year? Will Cokie Reed make the difference in reality that she would appear to make on paper? And I think she will, but, you know, the Stanford comes in here, even though they've lost Jeanette Poland and Kayla Peterson, they come in with a lot of speed. It's interesting, you know, then there's a Texas connection too, obviously, that's now on the Stanford team, that they've you know, looked into Texas and been able to get some very good recruits out of there. So I'm looking forward to that being one of the opening night matchups. I don't think we're ever going to see Tara Vanderveer on Dancing with the Stars. So I just wanted to say that.
Just want to get that
in
there.
Yeah, probably not. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see which coach, you know, might be the best on Dancing with the Stars. That'd be kind of fun.
It would.
I'd watch it then.
Yeah, see? But Tara plays the piano.
She does.
So she would surprise you.
Yeah.
She would surprise you. Okay, and tonight, not on TV, but Baylor, number one preseason ranked in the country, will start with a game against Howard. They play in the preseason NIT. The reason I bring that up is because it looks, you know, depending on how things go through the tournament, they could eventually play Notre Dame, who was the national runner-up. And so, we'll talk about that as the NIT develops, but things get started tonight in women's basketball. on Tuesday on ESPNU in the afternoon at 4 o'clock Eastern time. Defending national champion A&M will play Louisville, which will be a great early season matchup. And then Miami, the team preseason pick to win the ACC, will face Tennessee, the team preseason pick to win the SEC. So you gotta love these non-conference matchups that are on TV. That'll be on at 6 o'clock on ESPN2 on Tuesday.
And Brenda, I need to give a shout out to you because you're going to be doing some more ESPN work this year as a play-by-play announcer. Remember when we were driving back and I was telling you, you need to do more play-by-play. Do you remember that? We were driving back from Tulsa last summer.
Yes.
And I was like, Brenda, you need to do more play-by-play. You need to do more play-by-play. So you're going to be doing more play-by-play. I'm going to take all the credit for that one, Brenda.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
No, but you're going to be doing more games this year, which is really going to be cool for you. I mean, maybe not so cool with all the times you're going to be driving to KCI Airport, but but a lot of fun probably to work even more with ESPN. And I think a good crew of announcers. I mean, I like seeing Rebecca Lobo do more games. Stephanie White, new mom, but she's going to be doing more games. And I think she has some really nice insight into games. So looking forward to seeing you on TV more.
Thank you. I'm really honored. I still will be a part of the FSN package and the Big 12 package and other games that I do throughout the season. But I've got a nice slate of ESPN games where the schedule is such that almost all of the games that I'm doing are either the number one and number two teams in particular conferences or in the top three in the SEC, the ACC, the Big Ten, the Atlantic Ten, you know, in addition to the work that I do in the Big 12. So I'm excited about that and seeing more games around the country and being part of those ESPN broadcasts. So thank you very much. I'm definitely looking forward to that. And as we look forward to the season, you know, one of our questions that we got through Twitter was, what are some of the major rule changes? And I think there's some very significant rule changes this year. Of course, the three-point line is being extended, and so there's only going to be one line on the court. There won't be the confusion between the men's line and the women's, so there's one line. There won't be any intentional fouls. It will now be called a flagrant one, as a formerly called an intentional foul, and then there will be a flagrant two foul. We'll get into more of that. But the one that I really wanted to talk about is the restricted arc under the basket. And because the NBA has that arc under the basket, I think a lot of people have pushed for this for years. But basically, I want people to understand what that's all about. And I think we will see the game change offensively and defensively in the upcoming weeks as people figure it out a little bit more. I've just seen a couple of exhibition games, and already it's obvious to me that when you shift that secondary defender all the way over outside of the arc on the help side, that leaves room for cross-court passes or dribble penetration and kick out. It's gonna change some things, and if you don't get there, It's likely you can't get all the way there, then an offensive player has the ability to get all the way to the rim and score. All right, so let me give you the actual rule, and you follow along with me, Michelle. Make sure that I'm explaining it in a way that people are going to follow along with. But the arc deals with a secondary defender, not the primary defender that's on the ball, but a secondary defender. That's the person that's helping out on a dribble drive. And a secondary defender cannot establish initial legal guarding position in the restricted area for the purpose of drawing a player control foul or a charge when defending a player who is in control of the ball. So basically what that means is if a helping defender, a secondary defender, comes over to help on a dribble drive, if they are in the arc or even touching the arc, they will get called for a block. No questions asked. If they are on the outside and in legal defensive position, then they can draw a charge. But if you take a look at the arc, it's a significant amount of space, and you have to move over out to the other side of the basket to get into a legal guarding position. And that's why I mentioned, I think it's going to change the way people are aggressively driving to the basket because they can catch defenses off guard, and if the defense rotates so far over, they can find people open. I think it's going to be really fun for fans to watch how teams adapt to this rule.
I don't know how I feel about this, honestly. I mean, I guess we'll see how it. I guess we'll see how it it plays itself out. It seems like you're really giving your defenders. Well, I'd hate to be a freshman post defender right now. I'd feel like I was taking quantum physics because you're taking away an instinctual thing to do. This is what I think, anyway. And so I understand the whole point of it. I mean, I guess you could even compare it to, you know, the rules in football about receivers, you know, bump after 5 yards and then you're not supposed to touch them again until the ball's right there. So you could say in some ways maybe it has a little bit of similarity to that. But I am curious because you feel like this is going to help the teams offensively, or do you feel like it's going to open up games offensively a little bit more and allow for players to utilize a dribble drive in a way maybe they haven't? Is that how you see it?
I do, because if you put in the past, if you put the dribble drive down and somebody shifts over to be in help position, they could be almost under the basket. And if you aggressively drive to the rim and go up for the basket and continue on and run over somebody under the basket, you could be called for an offensive foul. Well, they're taking away that because the defensive player has to be all the way outside of the arc, and they have to get there, number one. And if they don't rotate there, then they're going to be charged with the foul. So I think you're going to see people aggressively attacking. But if a defender does rotate well, and I saw Angel Goodrich, for example, do this for Kansas. She rotated over extremely well and drew some charges, but her player was very wide open on the backside. And this is one of these, excuse me for the coaching part of this, but this is the biggest problem for defenders is the offside guard defender.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if a guard or a post player rotates over to help on the baseline, the other guard on the backside needs to drop down to help. And oftentimes that's not a natural thing for a guard to do, is drop down to the basket level. And so that's an area that's vulnerable on the court. So even more of an emphasis will be placed on that backside guard's ability to rotate and play good defense. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see how teams are able to take advantage of it. To me, that's the competitive side of me, and the X's and O's side is, if there's a new rule, how do you best use it to your advantage, both offensively and defensively? And I'm just really intrigued to see how coaches are able to use this rule to their advantage as we progress through the season.
And, you know, one thing that you will see, I think, is there's going to be some exposure of people who are really better at diagramming that, you know, taking advantage of the potential better openings they might get on the dribble drive, and if they have the players who are able to do that. So, you know, I think you're definitely, I guess when I say it, I'm always one of those people that thinks, oh gosh, it's going to make it more complicated for the officials, make it more complicated for the players, but I know they'll figure it out. But it is going to, I think you're probably going to be watching games and saying, oh well, this team is very good at figuring out how they're utilizing this to their advantage. And then it'll be interesting to see those teams that we think of as traditionally really, really strong defensive teams. How do they adapt to this?
Mm-hmm.
And how do they, can you use it to your advantage as a defensive player? Can you find ways that you can, you know, actually make this work for you? So mm-hmm. from that standpoint, it will be really interesting. And I'm sure something you'll be with your telestrator and everything, mm-hmm. you'll be, mm-hmm. that'll be one you'll be looking out for this year.
Yeah. I'm excited about it, 'cause you're absolutely right. On both the defensive and offensive sides, we're going to see some adjustments and see how coaches are able to best utilize this and take advantage of this new rule. So we'll talk about that more during the season as it evolves. Also, you mentioned all the things that you had written on ESPN.com, but you also wrote one about some new coaches and new places, with Joanne Boyles being at Virginia and Kevin McGuff being at Washington after being at Xavier for so long. Of course, Nikki Caldwell now at LSU. So we'll watch how those new coaches are faring at their new locations as well. So it's basketball season, it's volleyball, it's soccer. There's a lot going on in women's sports. So it's a good time for Women's Sports Central. Any parting shots?
You know, I think it's funny, just in the like however many minutes we've been sitting here thinking about this rule, it's, my brain has been sort of spinning, and I've been trying to think of who are the players who I think are going to take the greatest advantage of this. And I think that's what I'm really going to be watching for. Mm-hmm. You know, who's who really is... It's not just about being quick enough, although it is about being quick enough. It is having that decisiveness about, yes, what you're going to do with the ball. And, you know, we may see some, you know, there probably is almost nobody I've seen in women's basketball better at that than Deanna Nolan was, you know, with who, you know, come back to the WNBA, Deanna. That's right. That would be my play. But some college players, let's watch to see how they, you know, how they do this, and, you know, and how they take advantage of it. And I guess, Brenda, the other thing you could also say about this is maybe it's also good from a limiting injury standpoint. We have seen people get hurt with some collisions under the basket. I've unfortunately seen some ACLs that way. And maybe this is a better, you know, this will help from that standpoint, too.
You said it might make it more difficult for the officials. I think it makes it more clear. They
that's probably true.
Exactly. You know, if they're on the line, it's a block. If they're outside, at least it can be a charge. Although I see that being the big argument now. They don't get over in position, and the coach argues, well, they're outside of the arc, but
they're still not in position.
Yeah. So.
The officials will still get screamed at no matter what. So it's like, it won't make any difference. Everybody will still say, you know, well, my glasses. So, you know, it doesn't matter how many arcs they put out there, they're still going to get yelled at.
It's true. The life of officials. All right. Well, great show. Thank you so much for listening to us. Pat, let other friends know about Women's Sports Central, tweet about it, and join the Women's Sports Central family. Have a great weekend, everyone. On behalf of Michelle Vopel, I'm Brenda Van Lingen.